But first, what story is this?
This is the story of a woman, Blanche DuBois, who wanted so much to stay a lady. A vivid, vibrant, exciting story, because every searching chapter was written by men. Men who taught her to trust and to hope, to love and to hate. The youth who brought remembrance of yesterday. The man who was willing to take her out of the dark alleys of New Orleans. The brute who lied and cheated, who promised everything, gave nothing.
Oh, yes, doesn't it sound chilling? It's the trailer for the 1951 film of the classic play by Tennessee Williams, A Streetcar Named Desire, starring, of course, Marlon Brando and Vivian Leigh. This is the story of Blanche DuBois, who's a woman of airs and graces, but in fact she's really down on her luck. And as the play opens, she arrives to stay with her sister Stella and Stella's husband, who's a very brawny, very sexual man named Stanley Kowalski, a man of appetites, I guess you'd say. The play opened on Broadway 4 years before the film. That was 1947. And ever since, directors have been restaging this story of lust and madness and violence set in the French Quarter of New Orleans. The latest version comes from Perth's Black Swan State Theatre Company, and we're joined now by Sigrid Thornton, who plays Blanche, and Kate Cherry, who is the director of the play. So, Sigrid, let's start with you. What, from the moment Blanche arrives into the Kowalskis' hot little flat, passions are running very high. Tell us about your character. Who is Blanche DuBois?
Blanche is a troubled soul for various different reasons. She's someone who's arguably suffering from post-traumatic stress, developed at a very, very young age. She was married very young and lost her husband very young through tragic circumstances. The circumstances were such that they've created also a fracture of major guilt in her. So part of her journey is an attempt to resolve her deep sense of guilt over the death of her young homosexual husband.
And Kate, exactly. Take over. What's she walking in on?
She's walking in on a very happy little hubble of people, a group of people who formed a community in the quarter, which is sexy, full of jazz, full of violence, exciting. And her sister is happily married to a Pole, which just horrifies Blanche.
A Polish gentleman rather than to
exactly.
A lamppost, you mean? Yes.
A Polish non-gentleman,
yes,
which non-gentleman, is even more
yeah.
horrifying.
Yes. Yes.
Because, of course, Blanche is representative of the Old South and indeed the Old Guard in all sorts of ways, but also of a completely different sensitive and more sensitive sensibility than Stanley. She's the polar opposite.
Yes, she arrives all airs and graces, and Stanley Kowalski's there with a beer in one hand and his chest exposed, and he's a brawny working man. A man of appetites, really.
And he represents the new America, the America that's won the Second World War, that's full of energy and confidence. And Blanche is the old Southern America that's fading away, decaying, lost in values that are meaningless to the rest of the 20th century.
And basically, things get very, very hot and very, very, well, violent, emotionally very violent, because although they seem so different, in a way Blanche and Stanley are really fellow creatures when it comes down to, well, when you look beneath the veneer of civilization.
Some of their compulsions are absolutely allied, and part of the relationship is about compulsion, repulsion. They feel a compulsive urge and drive to a magnetic drive towards one another, and yet they are utterly repelled by one another. And it is partly about that sort of sickening process of push me, pull you in the big elastic band, which is very fascinating in the writing and also to play.
But the psychological violence is wielded just as effectively as the physical violence.
There's a lot of psychological abuse that takes place between the two, and both in front of and behind Stella's back.
Yes, it's hard to know who the abuser is and who is the abused.
It's always changes and it flips about throughout the play. There is, in fact, a denouement, of course, which is the part of the play is also about inevitability. There is a sense of inevitability from the opening moments of the play, part of the action of playing the play is to sort of drive this freight train right through to the end. And at the end of 3 hours, there is this extremely violent moment at which Stanley, of course, rapes Blanche, and Kate's production makes no bones about that. There is no censorship involved in this production on that score, as there was in the 40s, of course, when the play first emerged.
This is Books and Arts Daily on RN. We're talking to two marvellous performers in Perth. Sigrid Thornton is with us. She plays Blanche Dubois in A Streetcar Named Desire, and the director is Kate Cherry. So she's not a performer, she's a director. What we haven't said is that Blanche really is pretty much mad. And madness is not always a satisfying device in the theatre. You know, inexperienced playwrights and actors love it because it gives a license to do crazy stuff, to write a play in which nothing's motivated or authentic because you see the character is mad. But the madness here really works.
That's such an astute point, Michael. And I see her as a narcissist, someone who's been so badly damaged in her teenage years that she can't see anything beyond her own emotional needs, and she's lost really any sense of reality in a way. But she's like a brilliant actress. She can offer whatever performance the person she's with needs to see. Her realities that she creates are amazing. They simply aren't based in the grounded, earthy place that is New Orleans. I guess Tennessee Williams experienced so much madness in his own life and the terrible results of that kind of madness, where his sister was lobotomized for claiming she'd been raped by his father, that he always questioned what actually madness was. So you can get drawn into a mad person's realities and really accept what they have to say for long periods of time before you start thinking, hang on a second, this doesn't add up. And that's what happens with Blanche. The anguish that it causes someone like Mitch, who is a truth teller and looks at the world with clear eyes, to discover that he's fallen for an act, it's just devastating. Stanley falls for what Blanche presents, and I think that's part of his fury. Stella has walked a line where she's always accepted whatever Blanche chose to offer her to be the peacemaker.
There is another comment that I think is worth making about madness in plays, or madness in inverted commas in this particular case, because what does madness mean? And that's partly what, as Kate says, Tennessee is describing, or at least exploring. But the concept of madness and dealing with madness in the theatre can have this wonderful offer this wonderful opportunity to explore the limits of the imagination in an absolute way. It gives the writer and the actors such incredibly broad scope when it's tightly wound and tightly written in this play. This is play, in my view, this is a masterpiece, and it's perfectly constructed. And Blanche is, in fact, an extremely astute and intelligent person, so that her mad constructions are perfect and they are complete. She has a very clear understanding, for example, of sexual politics, of power politics and power play, and she's able to weave these understandings into her mad monologues, and it's a very interesting thing to observe, and it isn't loose at all, and in the way that you describe often can happen. There's no license taken by Tennessee Williams with this character, I don't think.
Sigrid, I think this question of madness does go to the heart of how you build a character as an actor, because often actors will look for the reason of a character. Why does my character do these things? But sometimes the key to understanding a character is to discover their irrationality, to know the ways in which they are a little bit mad.
And in the case of Blanche Dubois, it's both. She has very strong motivation for her actions. Part of the play is about, as I said earlier, her seeking for absolution and her sense of her complete absence almost of self-worth in combination with her narcissism. Mm. So that there's in this case a really kind of a great tension between those two ways of exploring the character. It's fascinating to work on.
And there's a complete disconnect between who she actually is and her compulsions that she plays out over and over again, and what she would like to be. And the fact that she doesn't even see the disconnect makes her mad,
yes.
I think. But in order to approach the role, both sides of those personalities have to make sense to the actor playing them. Mm. So Blanche thinks she makes sense as she goes through the world playing out two entirely different characters.
This is Books and Arts, and we're talking to Sigrid Thornton and Kate Cherry about their production of A Streetcar Named Desire. You know, when you're in England, it's impossible to perform a classic play without being aware of all the other versions that have gone before. You can't be Lady Macbeth without being compared to you know, the way Helen Mirren did it, or the way Vivian Merchant did it, or some other dame of the theatre. But usually we have a blank sheet in Australia. We don't worry about that stuff. But this play has to be different because the roles, I mean, we all know these roles. They were created by Marlon Brando and Jessica Tandy, Vivian Leigh in the movie, of course. Ingmar Bergman has played your role. Cate Blanchett's done it. So, Sigrid, you must be aware of this great historical precedent.
Yes, precedent, and some might say burden. Indeed, I think that that's one of the advantages with that is it makes the fact of the play having seeped so deeply into the universal consciousness, even if you like, is an advantage to us. This play is a classic, and our job, of course, is to simply to reinterpret, and my job is to give Blanche my own slant. She's different from anybody else's Blanche, and I simply have to have the confidence that that's enough. But I think that there is a really contemporary currency for this play, actually, particularly in the light of the Sydney production with Cate and the international tour of that production and the subsequent film Blue Jasmine, etc. So it's actually enlivened people's understanding and curiosity about the play again. So it's a really good time to be putting this play on, and I feel very good about the fact that we're putting on what is an unashamedly classical production. I think that Cate has given very much her own slant to this play. We've brought out, for example, a great deal of humour, which some of us, myself included, didn't really understand the extent of even until we got to the live audiences. There are a lot of laughs in this play. There's much more comedy in this play than I even saw exploring it on the page. And that's clearly intentional when you really observe the writing on the part of the playwright. It's been fascinating to observe.
Does it speak to us today about struggles we face, or is it a window on a world now past?
I think it totally speaks to us today. It is a window which gives us space to look at what happens between characters in a different context. But at the same time, we're constantly reading at the moment about the effects of alcoholism on our culture and narcissism and domestic violence.
Sexism.
We're so aware of the difference in space. So if you're living in a tiny house in a tiny neighbourhood versus the advantages of being in a beautiful neighbourhood where there's plenty of space between people. All those kinds of things are very much present at the moment in Australia and I think in any city in the world. And doing a work like this in its original form gives us enough space to sit there thinking, oh, that's not like us, and then actually be drawn to it going, actually, that is like us. There is human behaviour that we have been engaged in for centuries. And always bring it out into the light. Tennessee Williams was so engaged with the idea of what happens when people have their backs up against the wall, the savagery that comes out as a result of being frightened of losing ourselves or something else. And this savagery is a potent force no matter how the act is addressed. But in this case, we chose to open the metaphor of New Orleans. I just can't see how you would set the play in the way we wanted to do it without putting it in the costumes from the 40s in a space that reminds us of what New Orleans was like at that time.
That language sort of commits you to setting it in its original place, doesn't it? It's a bit like doing an Irish play.
The tone. The language and the overtones of slavery and the death of the Southern world happening as the new world is coming alive in America. Jazz hanging over the whole thing. There are just so many different overtones that suggest it has to be in New Orleans.
Yeah. But there's always a new world overtaking an old one.
Yes,
there's always. So, you know, there's always brutality. There's always guilt. There's always fear. There's always sexism, unfortunately.
And sex.
And sex. And there's always music.
Neighbors.
And there's always, you know, and there's always the mad melting mix of all of those factors.
Thank God.
And that hasn't changed. Mm.
Now, Cate, Sigrid was talking about the historical burden of all those actresses that precede her. You've got a historical burden yourself, don't you? Because your father directed this play.
He did. He directed it in 1959. He directed the first production in Australia at the Union Repertory Theatre Company, which is now the Melbourne Theatre Company.
Yes. That was Wal Cherry was your dad.
Yes, and, that's right.
I mean, 1958, you weren't conscious of what he was doing in 1958.
I wasn't even a twinkle in his eye.
No. So you don't. So it's really not a burden because you don't quite know what he did. You might have seen pictures.
There are plenty of audience members that say, I saw that production, or, you know, that loved Wall's work. And so I have heard about his love of Tennessee Williams, but it's a long time ago. It did hit me when I started working on the play and Christina Smith, the designer, said to me, okay, what is your first reaction to doing this production together? And I said, I just don't want it to look like my father's set, but I still want the furniture. And so I still wanted a sense of naturalism, which I knew that he would have gone for, but I also wanted that wild expressionism that Tennessee Williams is so much a part of.
Okay, pretend Sigrid's not there, because there is one question, a very personal question I want to ask you.
Yes.
When you stood Sigrid beside Nathaniel Dean, he's a towering hunk of a man and Sigrid is an exquisitely tiny person.
Yes.
What did you think as a director? What?
I thought that's perfect. I mean, it's a really, as you were talking about Kate Blanchett having done it, I thought this is such an interesting production simply because there's such a physical difference between Sigrid and Nat that the whole rape, the connotation of this tiny, beautiful woman being attacked by a man who is so much physically bigger than her is fascinating and quite different from some of the other productions where the Blanches have been as tall as their leading men. And that has a different sort of potency and sexuality. So when I saw Sigrid and Nat together, I thought this is a wonderful combination. They're both feisty, they're risk takers, and he clearly had physical domination, and that gave her the chance to have incredible psychological warfare, which is also great fun to wage in a rehearsal room.
Have you got anything to add to this, Sigrid?
No, I mean, I actually have a tendency to agree. I think that casting is terrifically important, clearly, and it's critical in the job of the director. But I quite like the sort of huge physical difference between myself and Nathaniel, because I do think that it enables me to step up to the plate, and I have to keep trying to win psychologically, because there's no way I'd ever have any physical dominance or physical, you know, hope in hell, really. I think that's it creates an extra dimension for the audience, which I think is really interesting, actually, yes.
And sometimes we all go home just feeling really dark after a day of both psychological domination and physical domination, but knowing that those two characters were absolutely equal, at different times, Blanche or Stanley are being victimised, and at different times, Stella is in control of a scene where it appears that she's the victim. So there's this constant power dynamic, shifting alliances that made it really exciting and engaging to work on, and I think dominates the production.
Well, three-handers are always really fascinating too. I mean, it's partly, you know, if you wanted to kind of use contemporary lingo, this is the house guest from hell. That's fun to play up sometimes, particularly in the, there's a lot of comedy that we use with that too. But it is overall sometimes quite a dark place to go to, but so extraordinarily exhilarating for all of the cast, both, and we've got a wonderful cast of characters and actors. Kate's managed to harness the skills of some of Perth's leading actors to play even smaller roles because they've wanted to come into this beautiful production. So we're very fortunate with our cast.
Now, as we wind up, Sigrid, have you been turning over in your mind how it sounds to call yourself Dame Sigrid Thornton?
Blanche would have loved it. She would have loved Dame Blanche.
Would that mean Sir Tom Burstall?
That's right. We go on and on and on, Michael. What do you reckon? Let's do a job lot, shall we? I wonder if you can share them, like, with your mates, a sort of commie version.
This is getting out of hand. I'll have to stop. Sigrid and Kate, thank you for being my guests here on Books and Arts Daily.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Cheers.
And the artistic director of the Black Swan Theatre Company is Kate Cherry, and she's the director of that production of Tennessee Williams' classic, A Streetcar Named Desire, and Sigrid Thornton plays Blanche DuBois. And if you're in Perth, you better get in quick, because many of the shows have sold out. We'll put a link on our website. Actually, they've extended the season, so maybe don't need to get in quick. It doesn't happen a lot, extending a season, so that's a good advertisement for it, isn't it? Across Australia, this is RN. You're on Books and Arts Daily with Michael Cathcart.